Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Well, I hope you all had a wonderful Easter or Transgender Day of Visibility, depending on whether you celebrated the promise of eternal life in the risen Lord or preferred to memorialize cutting off a little boy's penis so he could pretend he was a girl until he realized it was all a lie and killed himself so you had to spend the rest of your life loudly proclaiming you did the right thing rather than facing the guilt of imposing your perversion on an innocent child, which, you know, can be a great holiday too. In fact, President and venal houseplant Joe Biden was so excited to declare this Easter a Transgender Day of Visibility, he actually made two announcements about it. The first announcement said, quote, and this is a real quote, "I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2024, as Transgender Day of Visibility," unquote. In his second announcement, after the first announcement caused controversy, Biden said, quote, and again, this is an exact quote, "I didn't do that," unquote. White House spokestoken Corinne Jean Identity Hire addressed the apparent discrepancy in the president's two statements, saying, quote, "As a black lesbian woman of color who is a lesbian and black, I am absolutely outraged anyone would accuse this president of lying about what he did when he hardly remembers who he is. Last week, the man almost launched a nuclear missile at Orlando, so you can't expect him to know what proclamation he's making." Speaking as an historically appointed person of color who's a woman who has sex with other women while being black, I am appalled that narrow-minded Republicans should be ganging up on this poor, senile old man just because he happens to be president, unquote. Miss Identity Hire was so upset, she then burst into tears, then burst into flame, then was dragged down through the crust of the earth by a gigantic red hand with razor-sharp claws, then thrust into the bowels of hell for all eternity, which she said she also found upsetting, speaking as a black lesbian woman of color. President Biden addressed the controversy in a speech made to the employees must wash their hands sign in the White House restroom, where he was hiding from the scary chief of staff man who might make him go to another one of those meetings where he can't understand what anyone is talking about. The president said, quote, "As I stand here today before this bathroom sink, I want to remind you that transgenderism is fast on the rise among teenage girls who fall prey to every social hysteria that comes down the pike. And I'm proud to be the first man ever to pretend to take a teenage girl seriously when he wasn't even trying to get into her pants, though that would be nice as well. And on this formerly Easter day of transgender visibility, I want to say to all those teenage girls out there, I see you, and I'd like to see more of you, and also smell you. But that's not why I'm pretending to take you seriously. It's because I value your opinions as the most irrational people in this country, except for Democrats, and maybe those huge men who pretend to be women so they can win all the medals at swim meets. And I see them too, because this is Transgender Visibility Day, and those guys aren't just a bunch of hysterical teenage girls. They're actually dishonest and corrupt, which is something I can respect. But don't think I'm doing this to offend religious people. After all, I'm a devout Catholic, if those are the ones who like abortion. If not, I'm a devout something else. And I see me too, although that could just be because I'm standing in front of a bathroom mirror," unquote. Despite the president's remarks, Donald Trump declared he was personally offended that Easter had to share a day with transgenderism. Trump said, quote, "Jesus Christ would be rolling over in his grave, except apparently he's no longer there for some reason." Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show. All right. right, we are back laughing our way through the fall of the Republic. Just a quick note that we are having an Easter discount at the New Jerusalem, where Spencer Klavan, no relation, and I are discussing faith in the age of transhumanism. That's the newjerusalem.substack.com. We will have this for, I think, another week or so. Also, you want to subscribe to the Andrew Klavan YouTube channel. That's my personal YouTube channel, where you will get exclusive content delivered in your house, wrapped in pornography, so no one will know you're receiving right-wing content and throw you out of the social clubs. And we put up everything up there as the interviews. Those are also available on the Audible feed, Daily Wire Plus. You can get everything. Last week's interview was with Michael Schellenberger, which I thought was one of the best interviews we ever did, mostly because I didn't say anything and Michael talked very brilliantly. But he's at the public Substack. If you leave a comment on the YouTube channel and the comment is reprehensible in every possible way, racist, sexist, degraded, human, just lending to human degradation, we will read it on the show because that's what we do here. Today's comment, you have to roll it up just a little bit so I can read the whole thing. It is from Brendan McGuire, 5729. He says, Klavan, please stop telling the masses to love others as Christ loves them. It's too awesome and wonderful for us to bear. Believe me, Brendan, that has been made absolutely clear to me, and I will try to stop spreading the love of Christ as soon as I possibly can. Let us get to today's episode, The One Body Problem. So I don't know if this is me, but I've noticed that America is kind of lacking a sense of humor lately a little bit. It's as if we'd forgotten. We're just passing through time into eternity, and we're taking this all very seriously. And we're happy to laugh at the other guy, the other side. But the minute I make a joke about our side, everybody gets really ticked off. But I have to say this. Well, first of all, without a sense of humor, you can't actually see what's going on. And I'll explain why in just a minute. But some people may be offended with this, but I found Donald Trump hawking the God Bless the USA Bible hilarious, but also doubly hilarious because it was hilarious in one sense. Let's just take a look. This is Donald Trump's ad for a new Bible that he's selling. This is cut four.
I'm proud to be partnering with my very good friend, Lee Greenwood. Who doesn't love his song, God Bless the USA, in connection with promoting the God Bless the USA Bible. This Bible is the King James Version and also includes our Founding Father documents. Yes, the Constitution, which I'm fighting for every single day, very hard, to keep Americans protected. Also, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the Pledge of Allegiance are all part of this God Bless the USA Bible. And it's just very important and very important to me.
So the reason I find it funny is because it's like he's selling steak knives, you know, and our operators are on hold now. And if you call now, you get the Apocrypha as well or something like this. But what's also funny about it is that it's totally true that he is defending our religious rights in the way the other side is attacking them. And this is going to be one of the big fights we're about to have. Mick Mulvaney, who was Trump's director of the Office of Management and Budget, wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal this morning or yesterday morning saying that during the Trump administration, he asked for permission to hold mass during Lent in the old executive office building. And Trump gave permission to do that. And after the mass started, Protestants and Muslims and Jewish people started having services there as well, because they were working so hard that this way they could worship and still have the services on. And they were all doing this. And a lot of them were Democrats. They were the lifetime bureaucrats, or mostly on the left, and they were coming to these services to worship as well. But when the Biden administration, they cut them off during the COVID screw up, and then the Biden administration has refused to bring them back on. So no matter what Trump actually believes, what he's doing is standing up for the faith that underlies many of our moral order and also the moral order that leads to the freedom, that leads to the Constitution. And all of those things are actually true, even if it sounds like he's selling knives. And he's absolutely right, by the way, that the Bible and liberty are under attack. And there is a connection between the Bible and liberty. And the weird thing, or at least weird to me until you think it through, is at the center of that connection is sex. And that is why chapter one is called Jesus versus Sex. Does it make sense that the same company that controls half of online retail also passively eavesdrops on your private conversations at home? It's time to put a layer of protection between your online activity and these tech juggernauts, and that's why I use ExpressVPN. Think about how much of your life is on the internet. Sadly, every site you visit, your emails, videos you watch, messages you send, get tracked and data mined. But when you run ExpressVPN on your device, the software hides your IP address. Big tech can use this to identify you personally, so ExpressVPN makes your activity harder to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your internet data to keep you safe from hackers and eavesdroppers on your network. What I like most about ExpressVPN, it's really easy to use. All you need to do is download the app on your phone or computer, tap one button, and you're protected. So stop handing over your personal data to the big tech monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me safe online. Visit expressvpn.com/Klavan. That's expressvpn.com/Klavan to get 3 extra months free. Go to expressvpn.com/Klavan right now to learn more. But even to learn more, you have to first learn how to spell Klavan. It's K-L-A-V-A-N. No E's in Klavan.
There are no E's in Klavan.
So one of the reasons I actually love this kind of Easter versus Transgender Visibility Day controversy was, first of all, it really is a preview of a serious upcoming conflict. This is actually on the way. There are two big upcoming conflicts. One is between us and China. We'll talk about that another time. But this is another one that's coming. And of course, since all of these things get political, everybody was lying. Everybody was fake about it. And yet, even when people lie, the truth tells itself. So both sides took the opportunity to use this for political purposes. And let's get the story straight. March 31st has been called Transgender Visibility Day since 2009. This is something that was put in place by gay activists during the Obama administration. It's never fallen on Easter before, and Biden is the first president to make an official proclamation about it. But this was not the first year he did it. He did it in 2021. And there was also a story going around that Biden had banned religious decorations at the White House Easter egg hunt. But that was unfair. That's been there for 30, 40 years. It's wrong, but it's always been there, and it wasn't his specific fault. But Transgender Day of Visibility could have been moved to make room. I mean, obviously, it's not that important. It's a very small thing, and it could have been moved to make room for the most important day in the Christian calendar and the most actually religious day, the day that has not been completely secularized. It is a day that still depends upon your belief in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But obviously, this administration hates Jesus's guts, and the left hates Jesus most of all, and it does. And so Corrine Jean Identity Hire, speaking as a lesbian woman of female color who's lesbian, was obviously ready. They were waiting for Republicans to overreact. They love it when Republicans overreact because it makes us, or conservatives or whatever, it makes them look hateful, and they can always accuse them of being hateful, and they love it. And so she stepped right up. That was like T-ball for her. This is cut two.
So surprised by the misinformation that's been out there around this, and I want to be very clear. Every year for the past several years, on March 31st, Transgender Day of Visibility is marked. And as we know, for folks who understand the calendar and how it works, Easter falls on different Sundays, right? Every year. And this year it happened to coincide with Transgender Visibility Day. And so that is the simple fact. That is what has happened. That is where we are. And I do want to say a couple of things because I think it's important here. As you just stated in your questions, what we've been hearing out there, a lot of misinformation done on purpose. And as a Christian who celebrates Easter with family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American.
So obviously she's ready to just, you know, we didn't even notice. Who knew that Easter was going to suddenly spring up on Sunday and there was going to be a conflict and maybe this would, hurt some people's feelings or offend people? Because we're not really worried about offending people if those people are Christians. We're worried about offending everybody else, but not the Christians. So there was nothing we could do about it. So she was just waiting for this, and the White House loves this stuff. But Mike Johnson, who had got caught out, I think, accusing them of banning Easter religious decorations at the Easter egg hunt, he actually understood what to do, and he then broadened the frame. This is cut three.
This election is about showing the contrast between these two visions for America. And this proclamation on Easter Sunday is just a great example of that. This radical leftist progressive vision for the country is not who we are as Americans. And I think most of the country agrees with us, Sean. And I think that's why we're going to have a very successful election in November.
That's obviously talking to Sean. So once again, we have this situation where everybody is playing politics, everybody's lying, but the truth is telling itself because there is this conflict between the left and religion, and leftism is a materialist idea, and it's specifically around sexuality and transgender ideology. And I want to be clear, I'll reiterate this a couple of times. This is not an attack on gay people or people who have gender dysphoria. This is not about that. This is about an ideology, about an idea that you can change your sex, which is scientifically impossible, that a that there's this magical thing called gender that is different from your sex, which just is an academic, trope that has nothing to do with reality. And it's about this ideology, which has become, as we know from the death threats that our staff gets whenever we talk about this and the fact that they censor us on YouTube and everywhere else whenever we talk about this, this is a violent, censorious ideology because it's not backed up by the truth, because it's an attempt to impose a religious, in the sense of irrational view on our lives. And I'm sure you've heard about this law in Scotland, which allows police to arrest you for misgendering, which means telling the truth about what somebody's real gender is. All of this stuff is, this silencing people is part of this. And it is, in fact, spreading. I was joking about this in the opening, but it is spreading among young girls because young girls are very hooked into their social network by the emotionalism of young girls, which is not, because guys are kind of dopes and they don't really communicate emotionally in the same way. So if a guy gets depressed, all his guy friends don't get depressed. But if a girl gets depressed, not only do her friends get depressed, but everybody around her gets depressed. And even people who are friends of her friends get depressed. And Jonathan Haidt, the social psychologist, he talks about this and he says, this is how we know this surge of gender dysphoria is not, in fact, just people feeling free to come out. This is cut five.
It happens in clusters of girls. It happens in clusters of girls who had no previous gender dysphoria when they were young. So it's very different from the kinds of gender dysphoria cases that we've known about for decades. I mean, it is a real thing. But what happened, especially when girls got YouTube and Instagram early, but then especially TikTok, girls get sucked into these vortices and they take on each other's purported mental illnesses.
And this happens, the Salem witch trials were instigated by young girls, the Adolf Hitler, the Cultural Revolution, students, young people, because, of course, young people, just by definition, are ignorant, and ignorance and self-certainty go together. But why is this the battlefield? I mean, does anybody ever stop? Because when you talk to religious people about why they are opposed to transgenderism, they usually kind of flutter around. A lot of times they're not quite sure what it is that is a problem here. Why not? If we can change, it's not like that it's unnatural. Air conditioning is unnatural, and I love this stuff. But why is this so central to the upcoming clash of cultures? And last week I was talking, I always hate to bring this up because I know it angers people, but I was talking about how angry people get about the perpetual virginity of Mary. And the question is still a very hot topic between Protestants and Catholics. But it's not really, I don't believe what they're arguing about is the historical fact. It is about the meaning of elevating virginity, that the Catholics have maintained really since early on that virginity celibacy, in which erotic desire is trained directly toward God, is a higher state even than marriage. It doesn't mean you are holier. It doesn't mean that you're a better person. It simply means that by being celibate and turning all your desire toward God, you're anticipating the state of the angels in which there is no marriage, as Jesus told us. So you might be a crappy person, but in that regard, you are anticipating that state. But Protestants are very different. Protestants say no. And John Milton, the great English poet and the greatest long poem in English in Paradise Lost, has Adam and Eve go to bed and have sex in Eden. And he scolds. He's a Puritan, right? So he scolds the Catholic idea of this. And he says they go to bed, and he says they straight side by side were laid. They're lying side by side, and Adam from his fair spouse, nor turned Adam from his fair spouse. He didn't turn away from her, nor Eve the rites mysterious of connubial love refused. So she didn't turn him down. And then he goes on to scold the Catholics, whatever hypocrites austerely talk of purity and place and innocence, defaming as impure what God declares pure and commands to some leaves free to all. Our maker bids increase. Who bids abstain but our destroyer, foe to God and man? So God said increase and multiply, and only the devil would tell us not to be having sex, right? So that's this argument that goes on between Catholics and Protestants. And it's important because, you know, for the Protestants, the angels don't marry in heaven, not because they're sexless, but because they blend together so seamlessly that they're past sex, they're beyond sexuality. They're just completely able to communicate bodily. But the thing is, after the fall, for both Catholics and Protestants, sex becomes very difficult because sex is where the body and the spirit meet. It's where we express the deepest kind of love on earth. We know, and we do it with pleasure, and we do it with a great urge to reproduce. This is given to us so that we will reproduce. And clearly, the human sexual urge is out of whack, right? It's not for straight people, not for gay people. It's for everybody. The human sexual urge is out of whack with the body is out of whack with the spirit, and the flesh shouts and the spirit whispers. We all know this, right? Our flesh is always telling us what to do very loudly, but the spirit is always kind of a quiet, the still small voice within. C.S. Lewis has this wonderful passage. It always cracks me up. He says, you can get a large audience together for a striptease act, that is to watch a girl undress on stage. Now, suppose you came to a country where you could fill a theater by simply bringing a covered plate onto the stage and then slowly lifting the cover so as to let everyone see just before the lights went out that it contained a mutton chop or a bit of bacon. Would you not think that in that country something had gone wrong with the appetite for food? So that is an obvious sense that we are governed by our sexual urges in ways that sometimes might be harmful to our personalities. I mean, everybody knows this to be true just by experience, because we've all had sexual experiences where we thought, I'm really sorry I did that, but at the time it seemed like a great idea. Our appetite is out of sex with our spirit. And like I said, this is for everybody. It is not calling anybody out. It's all of us are in this situation. And God doesn't care. You know, God cares what you're doing, but he also knows what you're thinking. So he's not fooled by any of us pretending to be righteous. So the battle is not really Jesus versus sex. It's Jesus versus the fall. Jesus versus this thing that is out of whack in us, which is why those people who want to enslave you want you to focus not on how to use your body for love, but how to use your body in a world that is strictly determined by power, which is the material world, which is the fallen world. And that way, they want you to do whatever your body urges you to do. Balance of Nature, fruits and veggies, is the most convenient way to get whole food ingredients daily, like the kind of vegetables that actually count. Balance of Nature uses an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing their natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules are fruits and veggies. Balance of Nature helps our bodies obtain the necessary nutrients for proper functioning. Replacing deficient nutrients can increase energy levels and provide other health benefits. That's why I take them every day. Imagine trying to eat 31 different fruits and vegetables every day. That sounds miserable and time-consuming. With Balance of Nature, there's never been an easier way to ensure you get your daily fruits and vegetables. Go to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Klavan to get 35% off your first set of fruits and veggies and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com. Promo code Klavan. Think of me taking them while you're taking them. And also think, how do I spell Klavan? It's K-L-A-V-A-N. There are no easy things. Chapter 2, This is My Body. So I'm watching the three-body problem on Netflix. It's based on the much celebrated novel. I don't really know how to pronounce a Chinese name. Lu Cixin, I think it is. His novel is a trilogy of novels. The show is so far just dealing with the first book. And it was nominated for all the big science fiction awards. And the sequel won some of those awards. And I've read the first book of it. And I am really enjoying the Netflix show much, much more than I enjoyed the book. The book is very dense. with science and speculative science. And my eyes glazed over. And also, and I know this sounds hilariously racist, but you know how white people are always complaining that Chinese people all look alike? Obviously, there are no looks in the book because it's just prose, words on a page, but they have no emotional resonance. They don't distinguish themselves. You cannot tell one character from another, and being an American who only speaks English, the names get all confused and all this stuff. I couldn't tell anybody apart. And some people are complaining that they whitewashed the cast. They included British people and black people and white people and all these different people. And like, I'm like, good, now I know who everybody is. Plus, they have emotions, which they just don't have in the novel. So I'm actually enjoying the story, and they've reduced it to its plot, which is a very interesting plot, which I could tell as I was reading the book. But the opening scene caught a lot of people off guard, because it takes place in the Cultural Revolution, which happened in China between 1966 and 1976, when basically the students, the young people, because as I said, they're always at the vanguard of violent politics, whether it was in Nazi Germany, whether it's in China, you know, young people are by definition ignorant. They haven't had time to learn the things that you learn simply by living and by reading and by growing up. And ignorance and self-certainty go together. You're very sure of yourself when you don't know anything. All you have to do is go on Twitter or X, and you'll see the people who are screaming the loudest are the people who are the most ignorant. Once you get some experience, you start to be unsure. You know, you should be unsure. You should understand the world is full of gray areas, and we really should all just be a little nicer to each other, no matter who we are, because we don't ever know completely that we're absolutely certainly right. So during the Cultural Revolution, the students were ginned up to turn on their professors because the intellectuals were saying things that were against what was now going to be declared the truth, which was the communist ideology. That was going to be the truth, just like transgenderism, whether it was the truth or not. And simply because there was no God to vouchsafe the truth, we were the arbiters of truth, and we could just declare a new truth. Everything else was just a construct. It's just a human social construct. They were just going to declare the truth. And if you weren't on board, you were canceled, which among the communist Chinese was a lot more painful than getting kicked off Twitter. They actually surrounded you, kicked you, tortured you, killed you. They did all those things because that's how communists do. And this was obviously under Mao Zedong. So this, in the opening sequence, this professor is brought before a mob of young people screaming about him and interrogating. Let's play. I'll keep talking over it because it's in Chinese. This is the first scene, play clip one. And they bring out this professor, and they bring out his wife, who's now been brain. She's trying to save her life, right? And they've got him in it with a dunce cap, and they're holding him before the mob, and they start screaming at him. And what are they screaming? He's a physics professor. And what are they screaming at him? They're screaming that you taught Einstein relativity, and you taught the Big Bang Theory. And they start to beat him. It's just a very, very upsetting scene. And you lectured on the counter-revolutionary Big Bang Theory, she screams. And the poor scientist says, it's the most plausible explanation for the origin of the universe, right? And the girl who's beating him, they tell you this in the book, she's kind of curious. If time began, if time had a beginning, which is what the Big Bang Theory, what came before time? And she's actually kind of curious. And his wife says, this opens a place for God, right? Because, and she says to him, are you suggesting God exists? And the physicist says, science has given no evidence either way. And of course that's true, because science deals with the material world and God is spirit. But if time stopped, if there was a place before time, then there's a place before reason, because time is what causes cause and effect, and reason is about cause and effect and the relationship of material. And if there's no material, if there's no time, this is a place beyond reason, beyond matter. Now, the Chinese were very upset with this scene, and according to my son, Spencer Clavin, no relation, in the book, when they published the book in China, they buried this opening scene in the middle of the book because they figured the censors, is a big book, and they figured the censors wouldn't get that far, and they didn't. But in America, they put it back in the opening where it belongs. But the Chinese felt this as an attack, because all tyrants feel the truth is an attack. And here, woke people think it's an attack, because all tyrants feel truth is an attack. And here's what David Benioff, this is the same creative team, or some of the same creative team that did Game of Thrones, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, very talented guys. And Benioff says to the Hollywood Reporter, this isn't a commentary, listen to this, this isn't a commentary on cancel culture, but we do tend to move in cycles. in terms of human history, and we're going through a certain period of that cycle right now. There are many very significant differences between the current time and the Cultural Revolution, but there are also some similarities. It was never something where we were like, we should do this show because we want to make a commentary on that. But it is interesting that the parallels are there and are hard to ignore. And there are significant differences, like they were speaking Chinese. So he doesn't want to get in trouble, but he's saying it is parable. And it centers on our old friend Uncle God, right? Because in the Newtonian mechanical universe, people thought, well, everything's going to be mechanical, so maybe there is no God, although Newton never thought that. But modern physics, Einstein, who Hitler also hated because that was Jewish science, when they were talking about burning books, they burned Einstein's books, it was Jewish science. Einstein created a place where things were uncertain. This is where quantum theory and the uncertainty comes in, and where the primacy of consciousness comes in, because things apparently don't actually have full reality until they are experienced by consciousness. And if creation begins, then something comes before matter. Consciousness comes before matter, which is something we never experience in life, because even though our consciousness is what creates things, we know it's coming out through our brain, so we confuse the brain with our mind. But consciousness also does something else. It creates meaning. You know, if a tree falls in a forest, it may not make a sound, but it makes all the necessary attributes to sound until a human ear hears it. And the same thing is true with meaning, moral meaning. If a child is beaten to death and nobody is conscious, nobody knows that it is evil, for there to be true meaning, and for meaning to be true and not a social construct, it has to begin with the consciousness that created us and be perceived by the consciousness that was created. And that's the theory of religion. We believe that there was a consciousness that created it, and it created us in such a way that we could understand the meaning that he placed in things. Now, we are embodied. There is no way to experience our life except with our bodies, through our bodies, in our bodies. They have no other way of doing this. And that means that we have to find out what the meaning of our body is, because that's going to be the meaning of our life. That's where our body is like a word that expresses the soul. It's not like a little ghost inside the machine. Our body lives out the soul. And we know this because we kneel when we pray or when we propose marriage. We jump up and down at a football game. We understand that our body expresses meaning. And it's not just true for humans. I've spoken before about monkeys, and macaque monkeys specifically, who apparently have a lot of similarities to human beings. When a male macaque monkey wants to express that he is submissive to a stronger male, he presents himself, it's called, which is that he presents himself as if to have sex. He presents himself as a woman. The male monkey doesn't have sex with him, but the presentation is enough for the big monkey, the powerful monkey, to know he's not being challenged. We see some kind of submission in femininity. We know this because we use the F word to express hostility, as aggression. And in the church, thinking about the fact that God's meaning is not our meaning. Our meaning, material meaning, is all power. So the church starts thinking, well, wait a minute. This is the first time this has ever happened that people started thinking about what women needed, what women were, and who women are. That if women are submitting, is that a question of power or is it a question of love? And they start to say, well, maybe it's like, you know, in the world of power, the poor don't matter, women don't matter, the weak don't matter, only the strong matter. But Jesus told us, no, in his realm, it's the weak and the poor and the women who actually come first. The last shall be first. So the church thinks about this and says, well, if love supersedes power, if even the Son of God washes the feet of his disciples, that makes wifely submission look like the church submitting itself in love to Christ and Christ sacrificing himself to that submission in love for the happiness of the wife, a husband sacrificing himself for the happiness of the wife. So that's where we get this idea, you know, that, and that's why people who lose their religion begin to obsess over power, like Nietzsche, you know, basically saying this Christianity stuff is for slaves. It's just a trick that slaves pulled on the powerful. We need an Übermensch, a powerful mensch, to rewrite morality. And that's why the Nazis adopted Nietzsche, even though he was not a Nazi himself. They adopted his philosophy because they took him seriously. So what does a world in which sex is power look like as a world, as opposed to a world in which sex is an expression of love? Well, I slept an entire 4.5 hours last night. I'm so excited, and nothing will help you get to sleep like Beam Dream. Beam Dream contains a powerful, all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. I don't care what's in it either, but the thing is, it's not just a run-of-the-mill sleep aid. It's a concoction carefully crafted to help you ease into the sweet embrace of rest without the grogginess that often accompanies other sleep remedies. And as you can see, I'm now wide awake. Sleep is the foundation of our mental and physical health. That's why I'm usually such a wreck. You must have a consistent nighttime routine to function at your best. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar, now available in delicious flavors like cinnamon cocoa, chocolate peanut butter, and mint chip. Better sleep has never tasted better. Just mix Beam Dream into hot water or milk, stir or froth, and enjoy before bedtime. You get one of those little frothing things. They're lots of fun. If you find yourself battling the bedtime blues, give it a shot. Your weary self will thank you. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of a 40% off offer for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Klavan and use code Klavan at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Klavan with my promo code Klavan for up to 40% off your order. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking anyone can spell Beam. How do you, please tell me, how do you spell Klavan?
B-A-M, there are no E's in Klavan.
Chapter 3, Scary Ben. It's not that Ben, though he's very scary too. So here's another quote from C.S. Lewis. He says, "Those who begin by worshiping power soon worship evil." Now, why should that be true? There was this hilarious article in the New York Times, a former newspaper, and I'll tell you why I thought it was hilarious in just a second. It's called "A Brooklyn Sex Club Promised Freedom, But Some Called It Rape." How could that be? It's by Sarah Maslin Neer. I wish I could read you the whole thing. It's a long magazine. I think it was in the New York Times Magazine. I wish I could read the whole thing because it is just an amazing piece. But let me just read you a little bit. The townhouse, and just to set this is about these are about real estate holdings, apartment buildings that are dedicated to free sex, to orgies. The townhouse in Bushwick, Brooklyn was once a beacon for Jennifer Fisher, a place where she did not have to hide that she was polyamorous and kinky because her housemates were too. The landlord, a group called Hacienda, had a unique vision, creating a community of sexually adventurous people whose house rules preached consent above all else. Consent above all else, particularly during the orgies they threw in the basement every week. Miss Fisher felt a measure of pride at being part of a community that had pushed for greater acceptance of her lifestyle. That feeling helped her ignore what she described as Hacienda's dark side, a series of claims from guests and tenants who said they were victims of sexual or physical assault under its auspices. Then, said Jennifer Fisher, it happened to her. Now, what I love about this article, what's so funny to me about this article, is the po-faced idea, the straight-faced idea that there's no moral question about how we use our bodies on each other except consent. So, you know, if I want to beat you to death, as long as you consent, that's fine. But sex, for some reason, is the only thing we do with our bodies that has no moral value. They call kinky sex sexual expression, as if following your fleshly urges without following your spiritual urges is an expression of yourself, when it's not. It's just an expression of your flesh, because our flesh and our spirit are out of whack. Now, I'm going to say this again because it really does bother me. A lot of people who call themselves Christians, they react with this ugly, hissing, demonic hatred and cruelty to people who are gay or people who do have some kind of gender dysphoria. You all know my wonderful son is gay. And my feeling is, you want to evangelize marriage, get married, make your spouse happy, show that married joy to the world. And that's evangelical. Spitting insults at people like a possessed demon is evangelizing possessed demons, okay? I mean, listen, Christianity has been the core of my life and has been the turning point of my life. And Christianity can make sinful people beautiful, but sinful people can make Christianity ugly. You know, it really depends on whether you put Jesus Christ first or your own prejudices and small-mindedness. That's the difference. So, all right, the New York Times writes as if there's no morality to how you use your body sexually, except consent. That's the only thing. And then They wonder, how does consent, when we primatize consent, how does it turn out to be rape? So here's this wonderful scene where they're talking to all the people who've been assaulted in this place. Four people said that one former Hacienda resident who went by the scene name, this sexual life is called the scene, right? They went by the scene name Scary Ben. So one resident who went by the scene name Scary Ben punched or brutally bit them during sex or removed condoms without consent. Scary Ben's behavior so concerned a group of female residents at Hacienda in 2012 that they convened a meeting to discuss him. When a Hacienda organizer learned of it, he took no action against the man, but excoriated the women because Hacienda was afraid of being sued. It's always the women who get hit on this, right? When they say, could you stop having male athletes perform as women? It's always the women who get yelled at. It's amazing. So Scary Ben was still living in one of the brownstones about 2 years later after this, the women had gathered worried about him, when another resident named Kristen said he raped her in her room at the Hacienda Villa on Troutman Street. She said, Scary Ben, a surrealist clown and burlesque performer who was known at Hacienda for his intense spanking demonstrations, forced her to have sex while she was wearing a tampon. Now, who could have seen that coming? Who could have seen that a surrealist clown named Scary Ben, who gave intense spanking demonstrations, would mistreat someone? How could you possibly have thought it? But it's built into the system. You know, big article, very big, widely publicized article in the New York Magazine by a Pulitzer Prize winning critic, which is amazing to me, named Andrea Long Chu, born a man, says he's a woman, okay? And it's called Freedom of Sex, the Moral Case for Letting Trans Kids Change Their Bodies. And it's an insane article. I can't read a lot of it to you, but Andrea Long Chu has this theory that actually is true in part. This is the thing about transgenderism. It's actually true in part. He has a book called Females. This is not from the article, but the article was very big and sort of expressed his philosophy. But let me tell you what he says about females. This is a man who thinks he's a woman or lives as a woman. I'll define as female any psychic operation in which the self is sacrificed to make room for the desires of another. These desires may be real or imagined, concentrated or diffuse, a boyfriend, sexual needs, a set of cultural expectations, a literal pregnancy. But in all cases, the self is hollowed out, made into an incubator for an alien force. To be female is to let someone else do your desiring for you at your own expense. This means that femaleness is always bad for you because you are giving yourself up, giving away yourself, which we know in Christianity is what you're meant to do. You're just a macaque monkey. You're just expressing weakness. That's all you're doing. You submit to pregnancy, to being entered. You're nothing. And this is what he says. I'm still quoting him now. Everyone is female and everyone hates it. That's what they said in the Barbie movie, right? Men hate women, women hate women. Everyone is female and everyone hates it. If this is true, then gender is very simply the form of this self-loathing takes in any given case. All gender is eternalized misogyny. All gender is the hatred of women because it's all about power, and women have less power, and women are entered instead of entering. This is what they're saying. You're a macaque monkey. And so by being a woman, you have no power. You are nothing. You are nothing. This is a view of women you get from pornography, and it derives from something I've talked about it before. I know it's called supernormal stimulus, so that it's an exaggerated, this is what Wikipedia defines, supernormal stimulus, an exaggerated version of a stimulus to which there is an existing response tendency. So if you want, this is why boys start watching pornography and end up watching S&M pornography, something I told you I experienced when I was writing Empire of Lies about a sadomasochist, and I started researching, I got drawn in to this pornography because it is male action taken to its extreme, which is the way nature works. And this is why 50 Shades of Grey is one of the biggest bestsellers ever, because if a woman wants to be swept off her feet and carried away and wants to surrender herself, this becomes getting tied down and being whipped and beaten under the rule of supernormal stimulus. The opposite approach is the Christian approach, is the one where love supersedes power. I go back to Paradise Lost, this great poem by John Milton, one of the most controversial lines in all of poetry. He says, Adam is created for God only, and she is created for God in him. And that's talking about submission. You know, recently I was told about something that happened on the Titanic. I'm quoting this from memory, so if I get my facts slightly wrong, it doesn't matter. It's almost a parable. As they were loading the Titanic, one of the women said to her husband, I will not get on the boat without you. I won't get on the boat. And the man said to her, you know, I never thought I would have to command you to obey me, but I'm doing that now. Get in the boat. She got in the boat and he went down with the ship. That is Christian submission. That's a very different kind of thing, right? Because the symbolism of our bodies demands that we are going to enter each other and be entered, submit and act. And what the church is saying, what Christianity is saying, is that the man can't be submitted to until he submits to God. That's what Milton is saying. He is submitting to God, and she is submitting to God through him. It's a very, very different thing. That looks like the Titanic, which, of course, you know, that's sacrificial love. That is sacrificial love. The woman is sacrificing. And by the way, this guy is right. This true guy is right that we hate it. We hate submitting. Women don't like to be told what to do. Men don't like to submit themselves to God. I've done it. It's very tough. It takes a lot of work, a lot of psychic work before you do it. But once you do it, the relationship between a man and his wife is not at all about power. It's not about power at all. It is not about power, literally at all. It is about sacrificial love for the creation of new life, which is, of course, the meaning of Easter, sacrificial love that leads to new life, submission that leads to power. And the opposite meaning of that is Transgender Visibility Day, and those two are heading for a major collision, and I will tell you why. Genucel's Gen 90 is the skincare breakthrough from Genucel that not only addresses those pesky bags and puffiness under your eyes, but does so instantly. No more worrying about the effects of sleepless nights, stress, or seasonal allergies on your appearance. Gen 90 is here to provide immediate relief. Gen 90 instantly reduces the appearance of looking older anywhere you use it, around the eyes, the forehead, crow's feet, laugh lines, even the chin. You need to experience the luxury of Gen 90's technology. It's a paraben-free and silky smooth solution. You'll feel the instant tightening as it touches your skin, another testament to its effectiveness and your confidence in its results. Compared to other skincare brands, Genucel has 400% customer loyalty, and there's a reason for that. Right now, you'll not only get Genucel's classic under-eye bags and puffiness serum with every Gen 90 order, but also their luxurious Genucel XV, a collagen builder moisturizer with vitamin C and hyaluronic acid in a pure natural base for stunning results day after day. Go to genucel.com/Klavan right now for incredible packages over 50% off during Genucel's spring sale. See your results or get your money back. Order right now and get a free limited edition spa box with bonus gifts and free shipping. Visit genucel.com/Klavan. That's genucel.com/Klavan. You will look in the mirror and say, wow, I look great. How do you spell Klavan? And the reflection will say back to you, K-L-A-V-A-N. Final chapter, the New Jerusalem. Now, I always tell you that you get tomorrow's news today on this show. And sometimes when I say tomorrow, I mean like 10 years from now. And I've been telling you for 10 years at least that there was a religious revival coming in this country, but that the trick here is that it was going to come from the intellectual top down. And by the way, this is the whole problem with my life and career, is that I always say these things first, but I never get credit for them because I know them the way an artist knows things. I know them instinctively, and I know them from kind of reading poetry and novels, and that's how they come into my head. And my son, who, as you know, is no relation, says to me, you don't show your work. I always say, well, you know, I say these things first, and then some other guy comes along and says them, and he gets all the credit, and he says, you don't show your work. And I say, I'm an artist. I'm not supposed to show my work. I'm supposed to hide my work. I'm supposed to make it look easy. That's why I don't spell my name with any E's. There's no E's in Klavan. So how did I know? How did I know that this was going to happen? It's because I love the Romantics. I love the Romantic poets and that era. This is when the French Revolution, and an era very much like ours, the French Revolution and the failed. It sparked this era of hope, especially in the young, and then it failed because it just led to tyranny and world war. The 60s revolution was like that. I was there. You know, people thought this was the age of Aquarius. Everything's going to be love and peace and forgiveness. And no, it's just human beings continuing to be human beings. Big surprise. There was sexual freedom in both. People forget this back in the late 18th century, early 19th century. People were saying marriage is a bad idea. Shelley wanted free love. Percy Shelley wanted free love, and made Mary Shelley's life a misery by sometimes practicing it, and his wife, who killed herself. And so there were, and there, it was followed by decadence. This freedom of sexuality was followed by decadence. And then the Oxford movement came along, in which Oxford intellectuals, led by Cardinal Newman, revivified what became known as Anglo-Catholicism, which is my personal sect, with this new orthodoxy, and many of them actually ultimately became Catholics. And it coincided at the same time with the rise of a less intellectual religious movement, which was called evangelicalism. That's where the evangelicals come from. And that became the underlying philosophy of the Victorian age, one of the greatest ages of culture in the world, when Britain not only reached its pinnacle in science and literature and some of the other arts, but also spread them to the world. And I know a lot of people hate empire. I'm actually a fan of the British Empire. I think it actually improved the world with all of the atrocities that come along with human beings being human beings. But I think it was actually a good thing. So that's why I kind of knew that this time is so much like that, that something like this was coming. Someone sent me this article from The Spectator by Justin Brierley. Is a Christian revival underway? As a believer, I see signs that Christ is moving in the minds and hearts of secular intellectuals. And the thing starts with Tom Holland. I hate this guy, Tom Holland, because he gets credit for saying things in Dominion that I've been saying for years. No, he's actually a lovely person. He's an absolutely lovely person, a terrific writer, terrific historian. I'm joking. I also hate him because my wife likes his podcast too much. But you know, this thing that Christianity permeated our culture and changed it in ways that we don't even understand, you know, I was saying before, and damn it, I want credit for that. But he gets, he says Tom Holland was told that he needed an operation for cancer on his, I believe, in his digestive tract. And he, who has been struggling, as he told us on the show, has been rethinking his approach to Christianity and whether there was a God. He prayed to the Mother of God, Mary, and through a set of unusual circumstances led to his diagnosis being reversed and no surgery was needed. And Tom said this, it's a wonderful phrase. He said, the moment you accept that there are angels, then suddenly the world just seems richer and more interesting, which is a wonderful British thing to say. And I would add, once you accept that we are dealing with powers instead of people, we're dealing with powers beyond our understanding, the world makes more sense. You realize you're not in a fight with the guy next to you. You're in a fight with something else, some power above him that maybe has infested him. And then you can actually begin to love your enemies, which is very liberating, even though it drives all my friends crazy that I do that. So Justin Brierley talks about all these things that are happening, and you've heard them all on the show. Ayaan Hirsi Ali, an absolutely noble, heroic woman, has suddenly turned to Christianity. Russell Brand, not an absolutely terrific, noble woman, but a funny comedian at times, has said that he is now identifying as a Christian, a poet called Paul Kingsnorth. Over the weekend, over the Easter weekend, Jordan Peterson's absolutely delightful wife, Tammy. You would expect Jordan to have a delightful wife, and he does. She is wonderful. She was baptized. I think she was confirmed into the Catholic faith. She may have already been baptized. I'm not sure. And I'm really happy for her, and I offer Tammy my congratulations. And Jordan, who loves her so much, loved her since they were children together. And here is Jordan on an interview with the Catholic EWTN with Colm Flynn. And he says, well, what about you? Are you going to come across? We're all sort of waiting because Jordan has been wrestling with the angel for so long. And so he asks him, will you come across? And here's Jordan's response.
I don't think anything's holding me back. Everybody's got their own destiny. And so...
Is it in yours?
Is it in mine? I would say it's unlikely. But...
Why do you say unlikely?
I exist on the borders of things. So, why is that? I don't know.
You know, he exists on the borders. I think I know, but he talks about this too, that when you are a very bright person and you love your intelligence and your intelligence gives you joy, it's very hard to release it because when you say that, when you accept Christ, you're accepting a truth, and that means you move on from that truth. And one of the biggest things that kept me from doing that was I was afraid I'd become a smiley-faced idiot, you know, that I would start to yell at people who disagreed with me or that I'd become small-minded in the sense of hating people for not agreeing with my sense of doctrine. None of that actually happened. In fact, my idea of humanity became much more realistic, which is what happens when you accept the truth. But it feels like you're afraid of that you're surrendering your intellectual freedom. And that is the intellectual dilemma. But I don't worry about Jordan at all, because I believe when you turn your trajectory to God, God's like a tractor beam. I don't think there are actually real tractor beams, but he will draw you in, whether in this life or the next. And I don't trust doctrine. I trust God. I actually do. And I think that God uses the integrity of good men, even in their hesitations. And I think that Jordan's struggle draws all of us in. So another thing that happened this Easter week is the great atheist Richard Dawkins. There's a guy when he talks about science, I actually respect him, though not his religious ideas, because I don't think he knows anything about religion. But this is what he said. Cut six.
There's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, you know, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we substituted any alternative religion. That would be truly dreadful.
I know what you're thinking is, but I'm thinking, what do you think is going to happen? Because if you don't worship God, you will worship anything. And Justin Brierley writes, if conservative-leaning intellectuals only cosplay at Christianity, and he says that's Tom Holland's phrase, without really believing it, then this new theist movement will inevitably fade away. And I think co-opting Christianity in the cause of an anti-woke agenda in order to fend off radical Islam turns it into a useful political tool, but drains it of any life-giving power. I absolutely agree with this. I absolutely agree that that's true. But Dawkins is a symptom. He's a symptom. You know, if a great wave washes in, some of us are going to be swept away. If it's a great wave of truth, some of us are going to be swept away with the truth. Some of us are going to get splashed. Still means the wave is coming in. And that's why, again, trusting in God, I don't really worry about any of this. You know, there is a God. He is in charge. And I've got more faith in him. And God is using all of this. It's like Donald Trump and his Bible. No one, you know, this is the thing. No one thinks that Constantine's conversion, the Emperor Constantine's conversion in 331, I think it was, 330. Nobody thinks that that was real. He was a cynic. He thought, well, this is the way my empire is going, so I better get on board. But that transformed the Roman Empire, and that transformed not just the world as it was, but the Europe that was to come and all the people in the emperor. No one person, it's just like what I was saying before. Nobody tells the truth, but the truth tells itself. So I want to end, because I really do love Tom Holland. he's not just a charming, charming individual. I really enjoyed his book, and I've read more of his stuff, and I've met him and talked to him, and he's just a delight. So, but I want to end with a very long clip from him. He was on a Christian radio show called The Big Conversation, and he was there with a philosopher named A.C. Grayling. I'm going to play, it's 2 minutes long. And A.C. Grayling challenged him about what Christianity has done for our culture. And Tom, because he's so versed in it, was able to show his work and answer him very specifically. It's cut seven.
I would ask Tom this, and this is a surprising question maybe, to nominate for me one thing, just one thing, that Christianity has introduced that doesn't have some source, some parallel, some analogy in previous and in other civilizations. One novelty, one innovation in thinking about anything, ethical, metaphysical, or anything you like. And I must say, I've racked my brains over this often enough, and I cannot think of one. Would love to hear if there is one.
Do you accept that challenge, Tom?
Absolutely. I think the ideal of lifelong matrimony, I think that's a very distinctive Christian concept. I think the category of what by the 19th century is coming to be categorized as homosexuality and heterosexuality, I think they have no precedence. I think the notion of secularism, the idea of there being religions, I think all these are entirely exclusive to Christian civilization. I think the concept of science as it emerges in the 19th century, I think is entirely exclusive to Christian civilization. I think the idea that human beings are created in the image of God, that is obviously something that Christian and share with Jews. But that is it gives a degree of dignity to human beings that no other cultural tradition that I'm aware of even remotely approximates to. So I think that all of those are, and essentially what I'm talking in giving that is I am talking about what makes Western civilization distinctive. And one of the things that absolutely makes Western civilization distinctive, and it's an inheritance of its Christian past, is its assumption that its values are universal. This has been fundamental to the way that Christians have understood their faith, that it is for all of humanity. And to this day, the heirs of that cultural tradition want to believe that their values are not contingent, but somehow are the property of all humanity.
So let's go through that. Lifelong matrimony based on sacrificial love, homosexuality exists in its versus heterosexuality, secularism exists versus religion, that science exists, is an invention of the Christian culture, that we're created in the image of God, and that these values are universal. Is there any part of that that is not in direct conflict with the transgender agenda? Not with people who have transgender dysphoria, but with this agenda, with the free sex agenda in general. Lifelong matrimony is certainly under fire, right? What does it even mean for a man? Why is it special for a man to marry a woman for life, right? And by the way, it wasn't gays who destroyed that. It was straight people when they started to have no-fault divorce. The difference between homosexuality and heterosexuality, this is why so many women and lesbians and gay men actually are against transgenderism, because they're defined by gender. That gender defines what they are. Science is thrown away by transgender ideology. The idea that we're created in God's image, and it matters how we're created. You might say, well, some people are created differently, but we know when a body is broken. When a man is born with one leg, we know that he's supposed to have two legs. It's different to give him a mechanical leg than to give him mechanical sex change. And that these values are universal. All of that goes by the board. And one more thing. One of the things, and I'll end with this, that convinced me that Christianity was true is that everything it teaches me would be true if none of it had happened. But the fact that it happened is inherent in the truth of it. And this is something obviously Jordan knows, Jordan Peterson knows. This is something that C.S. Lewis and Tolkien talked about when they said Christianity is a myth, but it's a myth that happened. It is a core instinct of the human soul when it expresses itself in storytelling, right? That death leads to resurrection, that suffering leads to victory, that life has meaning, that flesh has meaning, that life is not about power, that a man and a woman, a husband and a wife are not in a strict power relationship. They're in a relationship that is actually about love and sacrificing for each other and for that love. Jesus is at the heart of every story we tell. Every story we tell, and would we have told those stories? And he's at this heart of the story of history. Would we have told these stories? And would these stories have been told to us if they weren't the truth, the way and the truth and the life? And this clash is coming because the minds, the big minds, the intellectuals of our culture are beginning to rediscover it. And once that happens, there is going to be a struggle for this culture like we have not.
Gear up for the great outdoors with Forlow, the brand that's revolutionizing outdoor apparel. Forlow's non-compromise, 100% American-made outdoor apparel protects your body from the elements so that your mind stays focused on the hunt, on the water, or on the trail. Your adventure starts with a solid foundation, which is why Forlow's base layer is designed to provide the comfort and insulation you need to keep going when the temperatures drop. Their uniquely breathable down layer ensures that you stay warm without overheating. And since proper protection goes beyond insulation, the final layer, a waterproof shield, completes the system. From UPF sunblocking material that shields you from harmful rays to polygene technology that masks your scent, Forlow's innovative designs and cutting-edge material ensures that you can focus on the adventure, not the elements. Their commitment to innovation and American craftsmanship will carry you beyond the known and into the unknown, where the journey truly begins. Get the most out of your time in the outdoors and go to Forlow.com and use code DAILYWIRE for 20% off your purchase. That's Forlow.com, code DAILYWIRE.
That scene. In the grand theater of life, donning the robe of a judge holds significant weight and authority. The gavels echo. It's not just sound, it's the weight of finality, which is why I'm absolutely terrified to bring you the news that the Daily Wire has given that authority to Matt Walsh. Introducing Judged by Matt Walsh on Daily Wire Plus. This is the crowning performance for one of the most critical minds I've ever crossed paths with. And when I say critical, I mean cranky and irritating. The people you will see are real. Disputes you will hear are real, and Judge Walz's decisions are not real, but they're legally binding. The conundrum, however, is who, in a state of sound judgment, would present their case before Matt Walsh? Good question. Take a look at the official trailer for the new Daily Wire Plus series, Judged by Matt Walsh, now.
All rise for the Honorable Judge Walsh. Please be seated. Ms. Goldstein. Mr. Bentley. Mr. Outerbridge. Ms. Spicer.
Your Honor.
Mr. Barney.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Singh.
Yeah. At 30,000 feet, my lips exploded.
Why would I pay rent to somebody who had sex with my sister?
A dog bit my finger.
He's allergic, like the grass.
If he didn't want me to drive the car, he would have took the key and had it with him.
Has anyone told you you're the worst negotiator that's ever lived? I've never been more annoyed than I am in this moment. Not even close. That does it. Please get the hell out of my courtroom.
I had a nightmare just like that once, except everyone was naked. I don't know what that was about. Wait until you see real petty court in action, where anything you say to Judge Walsh can and certainly will be held against you. Be the first to see Judged by Matt Walsh, Tuesday, April 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern on Daily Wire Plus. If you don't have a Daily Wire Plus membership, you can get it now for 35% off with code JUDGED at checkout. Go to dailywire.com/subscribe. And it's time for Klavan Clapbacks.
To everyone celebrating Transgender Day of Visibility, you're so brave.
Yeah! You are so brave. Klavan Clapbacks at dailywire.com. Both Klavan and Clapbacks are spelled with a K. Write in. Tell me what you think of the show, whether you agree with me or whether you're wrong. We don't care. We'll actually listen to all of you. This one comes from Father Andrew Clark. And there is a Father Andrew Clark in my neighborhood, a Catholic priest, Andrew Clark in my neighborhood. So maybe he's my neighbor. I don't know. He says, my dear sir, there are times when you have spoken about your values and your readings of the gospel, much of which I agree with. You have said that you have found a church, Anglican Catholic, which reflects your values, and that is why you worship there. My observation is, for those of us in the Roman Catholic Church and for those of us in the various Orthodox traditions, the approach is the opposite. We receive our values from the church. It is precisely because the church has preserved the apostolic tradition that we submit to her teachings. And yes, this is exactly my why I have not become a Roman Catholic. It is exactly that I reserve to myself, observing tradition, scripture, theology, you know, if ultimately I think this Pope, like I do think this Pope is kind of a heretic, you know, I'm just not going to go that way. And I'm not going to wait 100 years for the church to figure it out. I'm going to go my way. I know that everybody's looking for certainty. I don't actually believe in certainty. I believe in humility. And I think that not knowing and knowing that you don't know, the old Socratic wisdom that you know nothing, I still think that that is the best way forward, even as a faithful and hopeful Christian. I still think not being absolutely sure of what I think, whether it's in interpreting scripture or being told by the church, is the right thing. And that is why I'm actually not a Roman Catholic. And so you're right. From Joe, Joe Zambri says, I hope you and your family had a wonderful Easter. I'm a longtime listener, fan of your show. Your final segment last week is a perfect microcosm of why I love to listen. I guess it's the Good Friday, the end of the Good Friday show. Well, let's put that out separately because I thought that was worth listening to. For people like me, it can be so easy to get wrapped up in the headiness of religious faith. Your breakdown of Jesus' message of love cut to my core in a simple and profound way that reminded me of when I first read Mere Christianity. Well, that's a great compliment. Thank you. This Easter, I was able to truly be filled with the love of Jesus Christ to spread to those around me in a newer and more complete way. I plan on showing that last segment to anyone who will listen to it. Thank you for speaking the truth with love, even in the face of hate from both sides. We will always have your back. I just want to say, you know, I'm obviously a hard guy. And my wife says nobody ever reaches out to me because I spit nails and I look like I don't need it. But while I don't hear a lot of the hate that comes at me, I do hear the encouragement and I do appreciate it. So don't ever think that don't ever hesitate. If you're sending words like that, I appreciate them. From Stuart Kingsley, dear Hot Gandalf, in response to what you said about people like Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson being where God wants them, I believe that to be 100% true. The issue is that without Jesus, no one can come to the Father. Let me quote, I've been quoting a lot of C.S. Lewis this time, and let me see, I wrote it down so I would have it. There it is, in fact. C.S. Lewis said, we do know that no man can be saved except through Christ. We do not know that only those who know him can be saved through him. But in the meantime, if you are worried about the people outside, the most reasonable, unreasonable thing you can do is to remain outside yourself. And that's basically where I come down. You know, I just think a little bit of humility, a little bit of letting God do his thing, which is judgment, and letting us do our thing, which is try to move into that area of love, to become transformed by him to embody agape. That's what I do, and I let other people scream and yell at people that they're not getting it right, because I just don't think that's going to be. It's going to be on the final exam. All right, we got to go over to member block. If you are not a member, you will now be plunged as in a broken elevator down into the pit of clavenless darkness. So become a member today. Go to dailywire.com/subscribe. Use code CLAVEN at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans. If you have not done that yet, you are now among the wailing and gnashing of teeth of clavenlessness. For the rest of you, come on over to member block and let's talk some more.